Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. 75 years ago this summer, the Baltic states became a part of the Soviet Union following an invasion and rigged elections. And then in 1990-91, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania regained their independence and subsequently became the only ex-Soviet states to join NATO and the European Union. But last month, the Russian Prosecutor General's office said it would review the legality of the Soviet Union State Council's decision during the last months of the Soviet Empire to recognize the independence of the three Baltic countries. This, along with the Russian annexation of Crimea last year and the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, another former Soviet state, is reminding Baltic country leaders of 1940. Joining us in the studio to discuss the Baltic states is USD history professor David Burrow. He teaches Russian and Soviet history. He joins us here in Vermilion. And David, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Carl. I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, how serious should we take these reports that came out a few weeks ago regarding Russia investigating the legality of the Baltic states' independence?
Yeah, this is bizarre. It's not at all clear what basis that anyone else in the world would recognize for this particular claim. The as you mentioned, this is the 75th anniversary of the annexation or the invasion of the Baltics. That happened under the Nazi-Soviet Pact. So in August of 1939, rather unexpectedly, Hitler and Stalin, through their foreign ministers, signed an agreement to jointly invade Poland in September of 1939, which they did. And Stalin extracted a promise from Hitler that if he took the three Baltic states, which had once been part of the Russian Empire, that Nazi Germany wouldn't intervene. And so the Baltic states, once they were able to in the 1980s, as the Soviet Union began to collapse, wanted worldwide recognition of the fact that they had essentially been invaded. They were sovereign, independent countries in the 1920s and in the 1930s. That they had been invaded under this agreement, which Mikhail Gorbachev eventually publicly acknowledged. So they were the first states that wanted out of the Soviet Union. They were the three Baltic states were among the drivers for independence as the Soviet Union collapsed. The Soviet Union's recognition of their independence was more or less de facto because there was no way that they were going to stay in. They had backing from other countries, including the United States. Other countries began to recognize the independence of the Baltics as soon as it was feasible. Not soon enough from the perspective of the Baltic countries, but relatively soon. So it's unclear on what basis there's any legal challenge given the recognition of the annexation of the Baltics into the Soviet Union in the first place by an underhanded agreement between two dictators, and the fact that the Soviet Union no longer exists. So you'd be reviewing the legality of a state that no longer exists based on an agreement between two dictators, neither country of which really exists. So it's a baffling claim, to say the least.
Is it unclear if this is something that is coming from Putin or is just something that some lower officials have decided that this is part of a mood of Russian imperialism?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the current mood of aggressive Russian nationalism that Putin is encouraging. I think it's probably not sponsored by Putin himself, but it's hard to know that for sure at this point. But I think it's probably someone floating an idea to see if people respond to it and to see if it works. I mean, it's one of the many things that's adding to the tensions in the Baltic states as they look at flyovers by Russian planes that don't have their transponders on, so that that NATO jets have to scramble to find out what this unknown plane is flying over their airspace. Russian submarines, the Russians doing border exercises outside NATO countries, NATO doing greater war games in Poland, this summer, largely to send Russia a message that, hey, you need to remember that the three Baltic states are NATO members. Ukraine was not. If you try the same thing in the Baltic states that you tried in Ukraine, you're going to get a very different response. So there's been the relations between Russia and the three Baltic states have always been tense. There's the Baltic states, particularly Estonia and Latvia, have large Russian-speaking populations. The belief of many in Russia and of many in the Baltic states is that these ethnic Russians owe more allegiance to Russia than they do to the Baltic states that they live in, even though economic conditions and political conditions in these states are better, certainly in the immediate aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union, were better in those states than they were elsewhere. So people are generally materially better off in the Baltics than they are in Russia. But it's you know, again, we're grappling with an area where what people believe is going on and what you can objectively see going on are don't always line up.
Now you mentioned the ethnic Russians that are in the Baltic countries. It's my understanding that part of Putin's reasoning for annexing Crimea and going into Ukraine was
That's
to protect
right.
Russian, the ethnic Russians.
Right. Putin has basically, and he did this a couple of years ago, he's basically declared that he views as a matter of principle Russia's right to protect ethnic Russians who were once part of the Soviet Union no matter where they are. No one else uses that, no one else accepts that logic. But it's something that he's discussed, that he's given in speeches, that he's given in some of his periodic, very long press conferences. And a couple of years ago, he started using the term Russia to describe Russia and the people who were of ethnic Russian descent. And this is a word that in Russian has the connotation of everyone who's ethnically Russian. And it's not clear whether he is using this as out of political expediency or whether he feels genuinely. He certainly plays on the rhetoric that Russia is threatened by the European Union and by Western powers and the United States, and that this means that Russians everywhere are under threat. In the Baltic states, right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was legislation passed that restricted language use of Russian and some things that curtailed the rights of ethnic Russian citizens. And that was done because the Baltic states wanted to make sure that the people who were elected would be from the Estonian or Latvian or Lithuanian. And Putin never hesitates to remind people about that, about the Baltic states. And as he often does, he says, you know, we didn't start this. This is not our provocation. This is a response to something that happened a while ago. So he justifies his aggression against the Baltic states by saying, look, these Russians are under threat because in 1991, Latvia passed a law that said that you couldn't teach Russian in schools, that people had to learn Latvian. And so he responds to things that actually happened with a degree of escalation or a degree of threat that seems completely unwarranted. But that's how he operates.
What was the response of the ethnic Russians to what happened in Crimea and Ukraine, the ethnic Russians in the Baltic countries?
I think for the most part it was pretty subdued, except that it looks like that now ethnic Russians in those territories are getting access to Russian state-sponsored Russian television, which puts forward sort of Putin and Putin's official view about what's going on. And lately, that's been echoed more within those communities, within those states. So they're starting to reflect the Russian rhetoric about what happened in Ukraine, that it's not a Russian invasion. It's a native uprising by ethnic Russians who want to reject Ukrainian fascists. And I was just reading the other day that Estonia is setting up a state-sponsored Russian language television station in Estonia to counter that propaganda, because they're worried that the ethnic Russians are just going to absorb this information from Putin and wall themselves off and not get other sources of information. So
you're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're discussing the Baltic states with USD history professor David Burrow. He teaches Russian and Soviet histories with us here in our studios in Vermilion. When we talk about the three Baltic states, how different and how similar are they regarding the ethnic makeup and their history and their background?
That's a great question. The Lithuania is has the smallest percentage of ethnic Russians. I think Latvia has the highest, and Estonia is in between. Latvia and Estonia both have more sizable ethnic Russian minorities. All of these states were when they were founded, or what becomes these states when they were founded, were a mixture of different peoples who invaded and moved in. So Germans, there was a crusading order of the German Livonian, order in the 12th century, in what's now Latvia, and most of the Estonian, Latvian, and Lithuanian populations were the indigenous people speaking different languages that were other than German or Russian or Polish, which were the three big powers that in that region for centuries. The Estonia's closer. I mean, this is a very rough generalization that will possibly pain anyone who's from any of these three parts of the world. Estonia is more Scandinavian. Latvia is a little more Germanic, and Lithuanian is the most indigenous, the most unique of those three groups in terms of culture.
In regards to the relationship of these three countries with Russia today, how dependent are they, regarding energy and that sort of thing?
They are less dependent than Ukraine. They do not want to be dependent on Russia at all. All three countries are trying to make sure that whatever supplies of energy they get, they'll be getting from Western Europe and not from Russia. I don't offhand recall the percentages of their natural gas or that they would get from Russia, but they all would want to be independent from Russia in that regard.
In looking at the relationship that the Russians have with the U.S. and Europe, what role do the Baltic states play in that? And is this, how important are they when we're looking at the current difficult relations that the Western countries are having with Russia?
Yeah, this is the challenge. So in terms of population and in terms of their strategic importance, the Baltic states are pretty small, right? They don't have energy products. They don't have a great strategic value for the United States or for NATO. But they're the three former Soviet countries that are in NATO, so they're the vanguard. They're the border. Their importance in that regard outweighs their significance in other terms. They are seen as the most vulnerable because they're the smallest, because they were the most aggressive in wanting to leave the Soviet Union, and they're the most unambiguous about saying, at least the majority ethnic populations, we were forcibly incorporated into the Soviet Union, right? We didn't want to be part of the Soviet Union. We were forcibly in that. We want to be out. We don't want to be part of whatever grand, if Putin is trying to set up a Eurasian Union to counter the European Union, we don't want to be a part of that. We want to be part of Western Europe. That's where we see ourselves. We see our linkages going across the Baltic Sea to Sweden and to Denmark and to Germany and south into Poland. There's no ambiguity on the part of those countries and their leadership that they want to be independent. But I think the fear, a very real one in the Baltic states, is that they're not quite significant enough that if push really came to shove, that NATO and the United States would go to war over maintaining their independence. So they're in a precarious situation because of their size. That's really what worries them. It's what worries the Baltic countries themselves, is that the promises that, in particular, that NATO has made to keep them independent won't be kept, because NATO will decide, well, we don't want a conflict with Russia. Maybe we should just give these back, and we won't lose a great deal by doing that. They wouldn't lose a great deal economically. I think they'd lose a great deal in terms of prestige and in terms of the overall, morality of maintaining your promises.
That seems like, not that I can speak for the U.S. government, that seems like something that would not happen, that they would that they would say, okay, Russia, you can have the Baltics.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen either. I don't think that would happen either.
Now, from the Russian perspective, these were countries that were part of the Soviet Union, but they didn't want to be a part of the Soviet
right.
Union. I mean, now that they're not and they're part of NATO and the European Union, I mean, that's got to create some sensitivity on their part as well.
So. Well, I think that the people, some Russians adopt, particularly the Russian nationalists, and Putin's view is that it's not the Soviet Union was only one aspect of the Russian Empire. Prior to the 1917, the Baltic states were part of the grander Imperial Russia. So in that sense, they were Russia. Right? There was a Polish-Lithuanian kingdom in the medieval period in the 15th and the 16th century. Estonia was a province that was called Kurland. Latvia was a province that was called Livland. They weren't independent states the way, say, Poland was, where there was an identifiable Polish state that was conquered in the late 18th century and didn't exist for a while. But when it rearose, Stalin and the Soviets may not have liked having an independent Poland, but they and Poland may have been part of the Russian Empire, which there was large swaths of Poland were under Imperial Russian control for over a century. But they couldn't argue with the fact that there had been an independent Poland. And of course, the Polish population was much larger. So the Russian nationalists now, they sort of overlook. They overlook the Nazi-Soviet Pact. They overlook the illegality of the invasion during World War II. And they just say, look, in the past, these countries were part of our empire. We deserve to be on the Baltic coast. They're really blocking our access to Western Europe. They were once part of Russia. They should be part of Russia again. So they take a longer view and they look past what they would call, what one Russian nationalist deputy called, the incident of the fact that they were reabsorbed by the Soviet Union by military force. That's just an incident. The important thing is that they were part of the empire prior to 1917.
How closely should we be watching what is happening with the Baltic countries in regards to what's happening in Russia?
I don't think it's on the radar in the United States at all. I mean, if you go online and try to look this up, you'll find far more coverage on the BBC and European newspapers and British newspapers than you will in the United States. I do think we should be paying attention because this is one of those flashpoints where there could be conflict. I mean, this is everybody's worry about these Russian incursions and the various war games that are going on in both sides is that there's some mistake that this could trigger a larger conflict. And so, I mean, I think we should be paying attention to it.
Now, Ukraine has, at least here in the U.S., hasn't been in the news much lately. What is the current status of what's happening with that conflict?
It is a low-level ground war right now. Officially, it is a ceasefire. It's sort of a stalemate. The Ukrainian government doesn't have the money to mount a major offensive against the Russian-backed rebels. Russia officially says that this was not an invasion and that it's not behind what happened. I don't think anybody outside of Putin's regime and people who watch a lot of Russian television really believe that. There are some fascinating examples available of people who have traced individual Russian soldiers at different places using their Instagram or other accounts where these Russian soldiers have posted pictures of where they were in Ukraine so that you can do some sort of individual tracing to realize that these are Russian troops that were on the ground. Right now, there's a sort of a low-level conflict in which five soldiers are killed or 10 rebels are killed or basically trying to extend rebel-held territory to encompass all of the two provinces of Ukraine that they want to control. So it's technically a ceasefire, but really it's a low-level conflict that's not killing enough people that it makes the news.
Well, that's always my I'm always curious about what happens when these stories, you know, they're the headlines, and then we don't hear about them anymore. This is still going on.
Yeah, Yeah, the conflict in Ukraine is a long, long way from being resolved. But it's a good thing that it's not bloody enough to make the headlines. But unfortunately, that's why it's not making the headlines.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Carl.